We would like to explain how dances are composed. What process an individual goes through when he or she decides to do a dance. For an example, we've chosen to discuss one of the dances to be included in the Orchesis Dance Concert next weekend in Lincoln Hall Theater. Orchesis is a dance workshop for those students and faculty members who are interested in the creative aspect of dance as a form of expression. It offers an opportunity for dance study, composition, and performance. The name Orchesis comes from the Greek, meaning to dance, and the group was started here on the Illinois campus around 1930. The composition, or in dance terms, the choreography of the dances is either done by one person and taught to the group, or is a result of cooperative group effort by the dancers. Louise, will you explain about the dance we are going to discuss, what it is about, what you were trying to say through the medium of dance, and how you began to work? First, what do you call the dance? It has a title, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, Miss Freeman. We've called it Timeless Encounter.
Why did you call it this? What's the meaning behind the dance that made you choose such a title?
Perhaps first I should say this is a duet that is being done by Sophia Schmidt and myself. Sophia is also a member of Orchesis. And it has been a project between the two of us. We've worked on it together all the way through. The idea behind it is a very simple one, that of two people meeting and the result of it. But we've tried to incorporate into it a universality almost, something of the eternal, which we feel does exist when two people meet. Perhaps just through a glance or a handshake, some small thing that takes only a couple seconds of actually being together will last throughout a lifetime. And that's why we get the name Timeless Encounter.
I see. Then this particular dance has a meaning that you want to project, a story, or what we would term an abstract dance. There are the other types of dances without a story or meaning that are just done for the form and design of the dance itself, which we would call a non-objective dance.
Yes. A dance without a story.
Could you tell us, Louise, a little bit about the music that you have chosen, how the music and the idea have fit together? In other words, what is the quality of the idea and how does it fit with the quality of the music?
The idea, as you can probably tell, has a rather ethereal aspect, and we were looking for that same quality in music. We felt for our particular type of expression, modern dance being what it is, that we couldn't find exactly what we wanted in the classic composers. So we turned to Béla Bartók, and he wrote a very interesting composition, Music for String Instruments, Percussion, and Celeste, which we listened to and we felt did give the exact idea of what we wanted to get across. I'd like to play some of that for you right now. You can tell from the percussion, this constant driving and sort of a surging feeling to the music gets across the feeling that we want to express through our dance, too. These timpani that tune up and the strings that come in expressing a lighter motif.
In other words, you think the Bartók has the exact quality that you are looking for?
Yes.
I see. After you had your idea and you chose your music, how did you go about finding movement that would fit the idea and fit the dance at the same time?
The movement had to still keep to the basic idea, which was that of meeting. So, to simplify the entire dance, we might say it's one of coming together, meeting, making an actual physical contact, breaking away from that. There's this lost passage, too, where we just wander as two individuals who are lost because we are not together. Then a coming together again of actual physical contact, and a moving together, and finally, at the end, a parting. Now, the actual movement that we used had to also fit with the music. So, a rather slow and yet strong movements had to be used.
How did you go about finding these movements, Louise? Did you improvise to the music?
Did you do any improvisation with the idea before you even chose your music? Did you move at all?
No, we had to wait until we got the music. And then, with our idea in mind, we improvised to the music, just danced as it played. And whatever we felt inspired to do, that's what came out. If the movement that came out of that was good, if it fit our idea, we kept it and incorporated it into the dance.
I see. Louise, then you say that in choosing the music, your dance followed the form of the music.
Yes, it did, Mr. Ribbink.
When the music became loud, you moved faster and with greater locomotion. When the music softened, you moved less.
That's right.
Isn't that right?
Yes.
I see.
We felt that in this way, too, we were able to get the unity of the thing by combining the musical highlights with the movement highlights, the strength of music and strength of movement.
I see. I'd like to know a little bit, Louise, about the costumes for your dance. Did you think of the costumes when you thought of the idea, or did they come afterwards?
No. As a matter of fact, the costumes are merely something that we've had to face because an audience will need to get some, well, I can't say they should get some idea from the costume, because this particular idea doesn't need a costume. It could be done in any clothing at all, but it's good to have a well-fitting, well-styled dress.
In other words, you think that the costume, Louise, should fit functionally to the dance. It either must help the movement or it must detract the movement. Could you tell us what type of costume you have visualized?
For our dance, we've tried to get a one-piece dress with long sleeves to give a feeling of unity of the body, within the body, that there are not separate pieces to the body. And the long lines of the costume help this idea to get across. It makes a oneness of the movement and doesn't detract from it.
I see. In other words, your costumes do not make characters of you. They do not have separate identities.
That's right. It's just a means of fitting the clothing with the pattern of the dance.
Yes, and with the idea of the dance,
yes,
too. And about lighting, Louise.
Well, we're very fortunate to have the Lincoln Hall Theater with which to work. They have a cyclorama at the back of the stage, and we can throw any kind of light on the back. Some dances use the curtains at the back of the stage, but we felt that this didn't quite give the feeling of spaciousness that we wanted.
What colors were you thinking of throwing on the cyclorama?
We thought a blue or purple, something that gave the idea of, well, that same eternal quality that you think of. I guess we get it from looking at the sky, because that's blue. We think of blue as being endless space. We thought to contrast that one blueness, too, with two side lights, one from each side of the stage, which would throw interesting colors on us as two individuals.
I'd like to know, Louise, do you think you have created a successful dance, and why you think this?
Well, Mr. Ribbink, of course you know that it takes an actual showing of the dance to an audience before you can know whether or not the dance has been successful in communicating an idea. We showed our dance at a first showing of the orchestra's numbers to each other, and we felt, after the dance was over, that we had gotten across our idea.
Did you get a reaction from the group that made you feel this, or did you feel it within yourself?
Well, I could say both.
Mm-hmm.
We felt that the people who were watching it got the mood of it, they got the universal quality, and we ourselves, as the movers, felt that we had gained something and that we had created something that felt good.
Of course, the final test will come when you present it in a theater situation. Louise, I'd like to go back to the problem of your dance and the development of it. Did, once you had the music and the idea, did everything run along smoothly, or did you sort of go off on tangents, or what finally resulted?
What you're speaking of would be an ideal situation, to have the idea just come right out and be complete all at once, but we had to go through quite a bit before that happened. We started out by letting our ideas just carry us any place, and pretty soon, before we knew it, we had all sorts of ideas that went off on tangents. And we finally had to realize that in order to get our idea across, we had to prune these vague ideas down to a main one, something that would still be simple.
It was a question of selecting the right material that would fit with your idea, wasn't it?
Well, yes.
You finally had to live with this idea, I imagine, and until it would gel. It, as you said before, this doesn't come all at once, but it's a living with the idea.
That's true. We felt, actually, we took much time with this dance in sitting and talking and getting our ideas clear, and in playing the music over and over and trying to sense the meaning of the dance in relation to the music. So not all of our time that we spent together was spent in moving. In fact, we spent quite a bit of time, well, as I say, in discussing it, but also in moving without thoughts of definitely keeping this movement or throwing out that.
I see. Louise, would you summarize for us, not specifically this dance, but how you as a dancer works from, how you work from the beginning of the idea to the final presentation of a concert dance?
Well, that, Miss Freeman, I think would take in about these five points: the meaning of the dance, the movement, the music, the lighting, and the costumes. Starting with the meaning, you would have to get your idea concise, clear-cut, clean, and adjust your movement that you are planning either to the music that you've already found or find music to suit the movement. Your lighting must also reflect this same quality, and the costumes give the final touch.
Thank you, Louise. I think that you have created a successful dance, and we shall see it next week.